This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
It's time for real stories from those who make our region and our country their home. Time for Making Yourself at Home, thanks to the support from the Ethnic Communities Development Fund.
Hello, hello, here is Access Radio Taranaki, 104.4 FM, your voice, your choice. We are here in the studio making ourselves at home in this beautiful day of Monday. And good morning, good morning. How are you, Amna? I have Amna as my co-host today.
She's good
from
morning.
Pakistan. And I am Alina from Romania. And also we have our guest, Juliet, who is originally from New Zealand. And today I'm looking forward to have her as a guest. As you know, Making Yourself at Home is about people who made New Zealand their home, but not only. So I'm so excited to have Juliet, who is originally from Waverley, South Taranaki, which is quite a small town here. I was just recently visiting Waverley. It's a beautiful town there.
Yes.
And she lived also as an exchange student in Thailand and worked briefly as a teacher in Japan in her early 20s. I met Juliet some time ago. We were doing together the Venture Taranaki program, Power Up, and I learned so much about her business, so I'm looking forward to know more about her. Hello, Juliet. How are you today?
Hello. Good, thank you.
Good. So I think it was a few months that I didn't see you. How is your Power Up Venture Taranaki business going? And would you like to share with us what was your project that you applied?
Yeah, so mine is, so my background, I've worked in television and film production for about 20 years. And so I just thought I would set myself up as a company rather than being a freelancer. Mm-hmm. And I also with a website, and I thought possibly, because most of my work is from Auckland, and I thought if I had a better website, then I might be able to pick up any international productions that are filming here in Taranaki. Because otherwise people just contact me through word of mouth, and I thought maybe that would be a slightly better platform, a little bit more work. But also it allows me, if I'm set up as a company, to pitch my own projects as well. I work on all sorts of different TV shows and film, comedy, children's TV, documentaries. Wherever the work is.
And you mentioned that you your work is internationally, like not only here.
It is mostly here now, but I have worked overseas as well. I worked in London for 2 years, and it was more, I think that was probably more out of curiosity. I'd had people contact me through word of mouth when they were filming in Taranaki, saying, you know, we need to film here, do you know anything about this? And so I was, I suppose, curious, because I don't know how many international companies do come here, the smaller ones, I mean, you know, documentaries and commercials that are needing help in terms of a production fixer.
Sounds quite interesting.
It is.
And do you have a whole team behind you that helps you with all that, or is it just you, one big powerhouse?
It is. I'm always part of a team.
Right.
But it is just me in a little cabin out the back of my house.
Oh, nice.
So I work remotely. But yes, I'm always with a team. So if it's a small documentary, it may only be sort of about five of us working together for a year or two. And then if it's a drama, it can be sort of 30, 40. It can grow to, you know, 100 if we've got lots of extras on set in one day. So usually quite a big team.
Nice. So is it something that you, like, do you, is it more like logistics, or is it you editing scenes and...
Yeah, it's, my job is more logistics. It's not, it's a very creative industry, but there's not too creative in my role. It's more budgeting, making sure everything stays to budget and make sure everything goes to the schedule and everything's done at the right place and we've got all the right people booked for the job. And
Interesting. Yes. Do you need any extra actors, please? Please. I always wanted to work in, like, not
an
as a main role,
right?
But in a movie or a sitcom.
Like an extra.
Like an extra, like just for a minute, just to get that feel of it.
Yeah.
So, see, I'm putting myself out there. Anybody interested, I'm Amna Haroon from Pakistan. Get in touch with Alina.
I was also working as an extra a few times. One time I was pregnant. I was pregnant in my role,
yeah.
And one time I had to be dead.
Horrible.
So I was playing dead in Romania.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Interesting. Mine was, I was an extra, probably at 21 or 22 in Sydney, and it was a Bollywood movie, and I had to sit having a cup of tea in a cafe and pretend that I wasn't aware of all these people dancing around me. And that was where I thought, I would love to work in this industry. This is fun, even though
it's amazing. So when your passion for this industry came up?
It was around that time, because I grew up in quite a small town. I didn't see television and film as being an option.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was working in bars in Sydney, and I, you know, started working as an extra. I saw ads probably, I don't know, in a paper or something, and started doing a bit of work there, and yeah, it was fun. And I remember talking to people, you know, who were working in the industry about how to, you know, where they started and how they got involved, and then I came back to New Zealand and did a course in Auckland.
Wow, and it started from there.
Yeah.
How was your life overseas?
Good, yeah. Like I travelled to Thailand when I was about 17, 18 as an exchange student for a year. Mm-hmm. So that was my first, I hadn't even been to Auckland before.
Oh, really?
So it was going from
Waverley. So
from Waverley to
Thailand?
Yeah.
Which city in Thailand?
It's called Pattalung. Mm-hmm. And it's probably considered quite, I suppose, rural with by Thai terms, but it was big for me. It was 400,000 people, so the population of Wellington. Mm-hmm. In a massive school, 4,000 kids, you know, where I was coming from a school with about 250 or something. Yeah. Yeah. But no, amazing. Thailand is wonderful. Yeah.
And how was that, you know, big change for 200 children to 4,000 or, you know, how is that for you, like for a 15-year-old?
It was quite intense, but I loved it. Like it was, and it was before we had we didn't have, you know, emails or anything. I didn't even have a phone in my house that I could call home.
Wow.
I wasn't able to call home until I'd been there for a month, and I had to go to the post office and arrange it. So it was quite, I suppose, quite a brave thing to do. But I think I was quite aware that I had quite a sweet life.
Yeah,
quite an easy
yeah.
life beforehand, and I was really enjoying the challenge, and and everything was, it was completely different. It couldn't have been more different from how I'd grown up, so it was, I loved writing home about it and telling everyone all these hilarious stories and really tricky situations that I was finding myself in daily. Yeah,
it's so interesting.
And did you so when you came back, how was, like, just thinking about your experience, did that change you as a person, or did that experience kind of made you think that I need to move from this city and go somewhere else, or I want to stay here and bring all the big ideas and big dreams to my small city?
So I didn't go back to a small, I went back to Wellington where I hadn't lived, so I was going somewhere different again. But I think I was with AFS, and they were very good at preparing you, you know, for culture shock when you go over, but also reverse culture shock when you come home. And they had warned us about it, but I think I actually suffered from it quite badly when I came back, because I hadn't realised how much I had changed, and I moved back to a hostel situation, and didn't feel very Kiwi anymore.
Tell us about that. It's
it was a very strange thing, because there weren't many people my age that had done that. Different when you're 30, you know, most New Zealanders have travelled overseas and lived overseas by that stage, but at that age there wasn't. And I just felt a bit different.
It's like different good or different? I'm confused, kind of different that.
Yeah, just... I wasn't quite as Kiwi as I used to be. Mm. And I feel completely Kiwi now. I feel normal now. I'm okay
You feel normal. So interesting, because in all this kind of interviews, we talk about people that were coming to New Zealand and they didn't feel anymore who they are. But for a Kiwi coming, you know, living somewhere else and coming back to New Zealand, and you saying, like, I didn't feel so much Kiwi, it means that, like, for me, Kiwi, it means somebody who is in flip-flops, right? Or like somebody who is using the slangs, or what is a Kiwi? Or would you like to share with us?
It's a really hard thing to explain, because maybe it was more to do with my age as well.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, like I said, people hadn't really travelled at that age. And so, maybe I spoke, I probably lost a bit of my strong Kiwi accent as well from travelling. But other people probably didn't know. They probably just thought I was just another Kiwi, but I felt very different, probably culturally as well. Like people say, you know, you go over for a year and as an exchange student, it goes really fast and you'll have a great time. But it felt long for me. It felt like I was there for 5 years, because it was so different every day, you know, and you're learning this new language and the culture is completely different. Mm. So I think culturally I probably had changed inside quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like I remember going on a trip after I'd been in Thailand for maybe 10 months, and I went to Phuket or somewhere like that that was quite touristy, and I remember being really excited about seeing, you know, Westerners again and being able to speak English. And then I realised when I got there that I didn't feel anything in common with them anymore. I felt a lot safer with my Thai friends and I felt like I had more in common with them, and
it's so interesting. I was also, I remember when I first gone out from Romania, and I was also in my 20s, and I've been to America, and I didn't travel anywhere else, also in Romania, just from a small city in Romania to America in New York. And I was like, I was such a big cultural shock to see everybody, how friendly they are.
Yeah, right.
Because in Romania, people are not so friendly with their own people. But in America, everybody's so friendly. And and I remember when I was coming back home, I was not the same.
Yeah, right.
And I felt I fitted more in outside my country than in my country. Because I was strange in my country either way before that.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's interesting to hear the same thing from you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think it's if you have an opportunity and if you get a chance, traveling is an interesting way to not just find about other people, but a lot about yourself as well. Like, and you get to learn so much as well. You get to let go a lot, and you get to like learn and unlearn a lot. So when I moved from Pakistan here, it has been like a challenge trusting people, because I've in Pakistan we're used to, like, not everybody, but I'm not generalizing this, but we're used to scams and lying a lot. And when people are genuinely nice here and like they're genuinely saying things, it takes me a while to like accept that. And I have to like question that. You're not joking, right? Like, are you genuinely saying that?
Are you
like
really inviting me to dinner?
So it takes me, it took me a while, and now I'm okay. Now when I go back home, I think everybody is genuinely nice here. Now nobody lies, but I was scammed back in Pakistan because I thought, no, they're fine, they're okay. But I forgot this is how it is here. You have to be overly street smart about these things, and you can't just go on trusting everybody. Everybody's like quite sly foxes.
I know.
So I would actually get really angry that, look, I'm giving you a benefit of the doubt, and I was like trusting them, and this is how they are. Our culture is like this, but you do pick up the good things, and you do question a lot of things as well,
because it's different.
Do you get the same, like when you go home, do you feel less Pakistani now that you've been away for so long?
Sometimes I think I try too hard to be a Pakistani. I've obviously, like, I've improved as well. There's so much that I've learned, and I think I've become more open and vocal about things as well. I used to be okay with everything wrong going on as well, because that's how it is, and you just move on with your life. And but now I do question all these things, but I've definitely become dumber. Like, I need to be more vigilant about things when I go home.
And it's,
I used to be like that, but like, we've been here 4 years, and I've given up on that. My kids are quite naive as well. Mm. So kids back home are like really smart that way.
Yeah, right.
So
like smart as.
They're quite...
I remember when I was in Romania 3 years ago, and I was so excited to be there, and I've forgotten all about Romanian culture and how people are, and I was going to the shop and buying my favorite food, and I wanted to pay, and then the lady, you know, the cashier, she was so grumpy. I didn't have enough money, I don't know what, and she was yelling on me, and I was thinking, oh, that's refreshing. That's why maybe I decided to stay more in New Zealand, you know. It's and sometimes you need to be reminded when you go back to your own country. I mean, Romania, it's a lovely country, and I really love my country, you know. But sometimes this cultural shock, like being kind, you know, which you find here in New Zealand, everybody's nice and kind and happy. When you go to other countries, like, you know, in Europe, not everybody will be in a good mood every day.
Mm. Now we get a cultural shock going back to our own home country.
Yes,
not
exactly.
Going anywhere else. Going back to our own home country gives me quite a shocker now. Like, what just happened here? Like,
what
what's
is this?
Going on?
What is this happening, right?
Yeah.
And you said that you also work in Thailand, and then you came back in New Zealand. And can you share with us what kind of movies inspire you? What is your some topics that you use in your movies?
There's such a range, actually. Like, I like jobs where I'm working with really good people. That's probably key for me. But I really do work on all sorts of different programs. Like, there's some kids shows that I love. Comedy is always really fun as well. But then I might work on the next job, might be a really serious documentary. They're all quite different, and I love that. I love, you know, being able to change every few months and work on something, learn about something completely different. Yeah.
Do you have any, what is your last movie that you made?
I was going to ask that. Can you name a few that you've worked recently on?
Yes, I hope I can remember. Yes, so my one that I've worked on, we've done three series of it, and it's called My Favourite Dead Person, and it's a children's TV show, and it's really just a fun, it's a lot of people working on it, and we have all these comedians and writers that come together, and they'll write funny little comedy sketches about all these famous historical New Zealand people, then the stories will be told through children that we interview. And so, then they'll be recreated with actors and everything. It's like a drama series, in that you'll have, you know, your wardrobe department and your lighting and props and everything. But it's a very small crew that we have, and it's fun. It's just a fun little show, and we've got a really really good team. Like, that makes a big difference when every department works well.
And where can we see the movie or the shows?
So that's a series that's on RNZ. There's a lot of really good video content on RNZ now. I don't know.
It's the only one that I have.
Oh, right. Oh, good. Yeah. What's another one? Another one that was very different was called Dad Adolescence, and that was about teenage fathers in New Zealand. And that was with a very small crew. And so we'd follow, there were five dads around New Zealand, and we'd follow them over roughly a year period and how they were managing.
Is there anything locally made, as in within New Plymouth, Taranaki?
There's a couple that I was working with. They based themselves in Hawera for a while, and they make a lot of really awesome shows. But when I first moved down here and I hadn't been working, my son was still quite young, and then I realised that there was this other group of people that had just moved down as well, and so I kept contacting them and saying, hey, we should meet up, because work in TV, and it was just lucky that things happened at the right time, and they made this amazing children's TV series in Hawera. They got all of the casting was done around Taranaki, and they got these great kids on board, and we made this really fun little drama down there, and most of the crew would come from Auckland or Wellington or Christchurch would fly in, but we tried to get a few local wherever we could. That was amazing. That was a dream job to be able to, because I didn't think I would continue working in television when I moved down here, and then very lucky that all happened.
Nice.
And do you have another project coming up?
I do. I do. I'm just trying to think of how much I can say about it. But I'm pretty sure I can because it's on New Zealand on their website that they've got funding. But it's Muster Dog, so it's an Australian format. And we're going to make a New Zealand version of it. So that's about farm dogs, like sheep dogs, and there's a litter of puppies, and then they go out to five different farmers around New Zealand, and they have to train them up over a year period. So that will be kind of like a documentary style with this very small crew.
Wow.
So, yeah, awesome, working with dogs.
So interesting.
Yeah.
We can put these names on Facebook for people to look up, and if they get an opportunity to watch it also.
Yeah, cool.
Wow.
And what do your kids think about their mum being so amazing?
They're so funny. Well, they come along to sometimes, or when they were younger, they'd come along and it was a hassle for them. You know, they didn't understand that it was a really fun job that I was doing, and they really embarrassed me quite a few times on set. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
But now that they're getting a little bit older, I think, yeah, they understand that it's fun.
No.
Did you ever think about doing some movies with migrants, or have you ever done?
I actually did really want to. When I studied many years ago, I did some work experience on Asia Down Under. I don't know if they're still making that show. I haven't seen, heard about it for a while.
Yeah, can you tell us more about
that? Yeah, it was just stories about the Asian community in Auckland, and I only did like a week of work experience, and I really loved it. But but that was when I was still a student, and I suppose I was still like, this is probably soon after I'd come back from Thailand and also working in Japan. But I don't know if I've worked with many other. On many other shows since then. Yeah,
maybe something to think about for our migrant community.
Yeah.
How maybe a short movie or a short film.
Yeah. Yes, maybe, you know, you can, if you want for 1 year, you can come here at the radio, make short clips and put it together and say 1 year of making yourself at home.
Mm. Yes.
We just have to find some funds, right?
Yeah.
To pay you.
Yes.
And how is that? You said you've been Japan and Thailand.
Mm.
Is it like very different? How are the countries?
Those two.
Yeah,
really different. Japan, I haven't been to Japan for a long time. This is probably maybe 20 or 25 years ago I was there, and it seemed more futuristic than where we are now. Like it was very, very modern. I was only in Tokyo as well. I never sort of made it further. Really busy, lots of people. And then Thailand was... maybe a little bit more rural and, quite different, I would say, culturally as well. The Thai people are quite, maybe a little bit more open and maybe it was different. The cities were different, I think, where I was. Mm-hmm. Tokyo is a really big, you know, cosmopolitan city.
Yeah.
And the other place that I was in, I never saw tourists there. Like the whole time I was there, people would race out in the street to look at me because I was a bit of a novelty.
Mm-hmm.
And,
really?
Yeah, a really long time. And then, I remember I'd been there for a long time, maybe 6 months before I saw a couple... backpacking, and I think even I ran out to look at them because I hadn't seen anyone else like that in town.
You are part of their culture, right? Yeah.
Mm.
Interesting.
So you know how they say that Taranaki, New Plymouth, and Japan are more like sister cities?
Yeah.
I know you weren't long time ago, but do you find any similarities?
Mm.
Do you get that hint there when you were there that, it's more like Plymouth or...
Because
of the mountains?
The mountains, but also I think when I came to Pukekura Park years later, I think we were sort of doing a bit of a recce down here, me and my husband, trying to figure out if we would want to live here, and we were walking through Pukekura Park, and it reminded me so much of Japan, of a park I'd been to there. I can't remember where the park was or what it was called, but I remember this really beautiful park that I went to that looked just like Pukekura Park, but with heaps more people wandering around.
Of course. Yeah. So there are similarities between Taranaki and Tokyo, you said, or Japan?
Japan.
Japan. Interesting. I've never heard that. Yes, beautiful.
And they used to have a lot of, I've just only read about it because I went to one of their Japanese tea ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they mentioned all these things, that they used to have a lot of student exchange programs and Japanese students used to come to mm-hmm. New Plymouth. So that's when I started reading a little about it. And it says that these two cities are called sister cities.
Sister cities.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because of the similarities, because of Mount Taranaki and Mount Fuji. So because all those similarities.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah, and there is a big Japanese community here.
It
right?
is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and they had, remember last year it was a Japanese day and there was such a big event that people had to stay in line.
Oh, really?
To come in for the Japanese
this year.
It was this year
this
or last year?
Year,
right?
This
yeah.
year.
I actually went along and I got the date wrong. We were there the weekend before. So.
That's why it was not yeah. so crowded. But it was like big success. I
it
mean,
was
like
huge.
Yeah.
Like they had lines outside. People yeah. were waiting in lines to get in.
Mm,
yeah.
That's good.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so what was the best experience like overseas or like one thing that you really enjoy? And how would you describe that?
Mm. There's too many. I've had I've traveled a lot outside of those other places
mm-hmm.
as well.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. So
somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah. Rwanda was a really amazing place. So I only had a week there, but it was just one of those amazing places where I didn't want to go to sleep at night because I was so excited about waking up again and seeing more. It was really yeah.
Rwanda.
Yeah. It
where
was
is
really
that?
In very central Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I had also on the completely different sort of travel, a trip on my way home from living in London, and I wasn't quite sure if I was ready to come back to New Zealand, and I had family coming over to visit. And so I went to Central America for 2.5 months, just mm-hmm. With quite a small budget from, you know, but amazing that you can do that, you know,
again.
Come after you've been earning pounds. And I lived very cheaply in, you know, backpackers and everything. But that was a really amazing trip of just, like, wandering, for 2.5 months. It was wonderful, yeah.
What did you enjoy in Central America?
I think because I'd been working in a really stressful job in London as well. And, you know, sometimes it takes you a few days on holiday to unwind, but it took me weeks because I was quite stressed out, I think. And, I loved the people. I loved Nicaragua. And there were strikes going on with the transport at the time, and so I kind of got stuck on this island, Ometepe, which was wonderful just to, you know, to not have a time. I didn't have to leave. I just, stayed on this lovely, sleepy island for weeks and weeks, and
What is the name again?
Ometepe.
Ometepe.
I think I'm saying that right, yeah.
I've never heard about it.
Yeah.
So it's like, and it's people from America who live there, or?
No, it's... No, it is mostly Nicaraguans there,
mm-hmm.
yeah. But yeah, I remember travelling from there to a little wee place. You had to travel quite a few hours on a boat, and then it was, maybe it was called El Castillo or something, but it was this really dreamy little village that had no cars.
Wow.
Because you could only get, it was really amazing, this place. I always think about it, how the pace
mm-hmm.
was, idyllic.
Yeah,
with no cars to dodge.
The new,
how refreshing.
Yeah.
Like no cars, no hassle, nothing.
Yeah.
Now you have a topic for your new production. El Castillo, you said?
I think so, El Castillo.
Castillo.
I think it's got a big castle there. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and how did they have a horse or how did they walk? Or?
I just remember people sort of walking around in bikes, on bikes and things like that, I'm just trying to think, like, to give it scale, like maybe it was sort of the size of maybe Aokura or a little bit bigger,
mm-hmm.
that sort of size, and
Wow.
Mm. There are so many things in the world that we don't know about, right?
And so... traveling to so many different places, any specific cuisine that you loved and you still either dream about it or you've learned to cook and now it's like a regular staple at your house?
I suppose Thailand, because I was there for a long time and I hadn't really cooked much before then. Thailand was amazing, the food there. But then also, Japanese food, you can't go past either. Yeah.
That's good.
But yeah, it's funny with Thai, like with stir fry, I probably almost do feel more at ease making that than other European foods. I feel like it's hard to get wrong.
Yes. And quicker also, I think. Like, it's less hassle and whatever you have in your fridge, you can just put it in your
put it there and you're done sauce.
And it turns out amazing also.
Yeah.
I think sometimes leftovers make the best food also, leftover dishes.
Really enjoy that. So, because we are almost finished to our show, I wanted to ask you, what would you recommend to people who are traveling around the world and moving in other countries? How should they make themselves at home? And how did you make yourself at home? I mean, back in New Zealand, you know, go back to Japan, Thailand. What was helping you to make yourself at home?
Okay, you have to remember that a lot of my travel was in my 20s, so I had different priorities.
Of course.
But I think there was two things, two rules. One was like if I was in a touristy spot, just to go a few blocks out of that touristy square, and then that's where you get the more authentic food. And another thing I used to... I just wanted to have a beer when the sunset was going down. That was the only the only thing I had to make time for every day was, I think it was about 6 o'clock in Central America, was to make sure I had my beer ready to watch the sun go down, and that was all.
Oh, wow.
That's a great idea. I think we should do this each day. I mean, if not maybe a beer or a wine or a tea.
You know. I can't drink, so I'll have a glass of water or juice.
Water, juice, yeah.
Some cocktail of juices.
I can't drink now either. Good. I'm a cup of tea now as well.
Yeah. Green tea for digestion.
Yeah, green tea is good. Oh, that's amazing. Okay. Good to consider. So two things, you know? Yeah. Okay, cup of tea at 6 p.m. And was the other one?
Beer.
Oh, the eating out. The further away food. From the main tourist hub, and you'll get... Yeah, the better, more authentic food.
Nice one.
And I know, I think you would recommend the younger lot to travel. Do you have any more advice that, because some kids or parents tend to hesitate sending their kids out of their country to just navigate life or for adventures. Do you have anything to say to them or...
Yeah, I loved it, and I was encouraged as well by my parents. My mother had also travelled when she was younger, so they never told me, you know, not to go. But yeah, it's really good. I mean, it really does, I suppose, teach you resilience and, you know, to be brave. And yeah, no, I would highly recommend it. Yeah.
Okay. So I still have 5 more years with my daughter, and then she can go away and travel in Thailand or Central America, El Pato, or I don't remember the name, but I will search for that. Thank you so much for today, Juliet. It was really nice to chat with you, and it's so refreshing to see how it is for Kiwi, you know, to travel around. And I really like your comment, like, I didn't feel so Kiwi anymore. And it's a interesting thing to find out.
Yeah, it's a refreshing perspective coming from a local
who
went abroad and came back and didn't feel like
Kiwi anymore.
Yeah. I've lost it.
Yeah, and I feel like everything is shaping us all. Like you said, Amna, right? Everything is shaping, and we all the time reconstruct ourselves and reinvent ourselves of who we really are. Amazing. Thank you so much. We love to have you here.
Thanks for having me. It's been lovely.
Yeah.
Yes.
It went by so quickly. Like, the conversation was so interesting.
Good.
Thank you so much. See you next time. Same time, same place.
See you.
Have a beautiful day.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.